I think it like started initially by the realization it's not like emotions are something good. Like I thought it's like emotions are completely stupid for most of my life. They just make you irrational. And the here's like, that's what makes sense. Yeah? You cannot trust your feelings. So at that point, it's like.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the You Versus You podcast, where I talk with members of the Council for Human Development, the connected community, about how we can expand our minds and recode reality. Thank you so much for joining me today, Simon, David, and Brenda. I thought first we can give our listeners some context about you, Brenda, as you're the first woman who joined the council. So when was for you the point that you started asking bigger questions and taking action to find out who you really are?
Thank you, Agnes. So I think when I started asking bigger questions, was already a long time ago, maybe when I was 18. My grandmother sent me to a Kundalini yoga class because I was very temperamental and kind of crazy. And I started there and things just started moving and changing drastically in my life and also for my sister. She was there as well. So there, many questions started coming up. Why are we here? Why do we have this kind of life? Why do we have this family? All these things. But I didn't find any answers. I just kept doing the yoga and my life changed drastically from that point on.
And what exactly changed for you?
So the thing of, I think it was releasing some kind of family charge, some kind of family history. It was like cutting the cords to that. And after doing the Kundalini yoga, it's when I came to Europe the first time. And it's when then I met Simon. And that was a complete life change. So from that moment on, my life changed 180 degrees.
And what exactly changed also in your thinking, or what were also the realizations you personally had?
The realizations I had is how crazy I was. And I didn't stop being that crazy. I was still crazy, but not so temperamental as before. So emotionally, somehow, I got more into a balance of emotions. And the head was also more free. Mm-hmm.
Can you give us an example of a situation where you were like emotionally crazy and what you were doing and how that changed?
Okay, that is a very Mexican thing. We are all emotional in Mexico. So if someone gets triggered in something, we would just yell to each other. And that is a common thing, right? But it's not a common thing when you do it with your family and the people you love. So I was, since a child, I was very crazy with my grandma. That's why she is the one who sent me to the yoga classes. And my relationship to her completely changed. I wasn't that hysterical anymore with her. And I was able to get my fire a little bit under control.
And when was really the point that you found somehow the council and started to think more about yourself and figure out what's in your head and what beliefs you have?
Yes, so that was thanks to Simon. And then I guess thanks to David, because Simon came here because of David. And I just saw how much Simon changed. And I saw the first months, he would finish the sessions with Ken and he would just sit in the car like this. And I was like, Simon, are you fine? Like, oh my God, that doesn't look like fine. And then he would sit around in the house and he would just be like, I thought, okay, maybe I have to try it out.
Simon, can you tell us a little bit what was going on in these moments after the first sessions from your perspective?
If I'm completely honest, like I was not 100% sure like what I was entering in. Like before starting the training, I might have shared it last time. It looked for me like for the biggest scam ever. It just was not comprehensible. What was supposed to happen, like from the place I was coming from. And I think, as I shared, the first weeks is about overloading the conscious mind, mm-hmm. like seeding information into the subconscious mind. And it's far too much information to comprehend with your conscious mind, and in a way you're sitting there, you're like receiving so many new information from different angles, from like from the left, from the right, from down, up, and it's like it can feel a little bit overwhelming. And basically it is about questioning your ever believed or thought is reality. And yeah, like in my personal experience was that the first weeks I was not really talking much. It was like listening, but also like trying consciously to understand it, but it was not possible. So it was like, I was like, this is weird. And I was feeling how my mind tries to reconfigure the new information I received, and was a state where I had no clue what's true. It was pretty obvious that what I thought is true doesn't make too much sense, because it's also like you're asking to argue your beliefs. And like once you start arguing what you thought is true or what you thought is your reality, and once you start arguing, it becomes really, really quickly obvious that that doesn't make a lot of sense. And then it's like, okay, but and it can be scary, because I'm 36 year old, and I like about limiting beliefs, etc., and conditioning. It's not the first time that I heard about it. Yeah, but anyway, then like sitting there and in a way realizing that who you thought you are is not really you, and also like kind of like zooming into your operating system and seeing it's full of crap.
Yeah.
It's a bit shocking, and it's kind of like your identity is fighting to like, it doesn't want to die. It's kind of like wants to hold you back, and then it's like, that's kind of, you see it doesn't make sense, but then like what is coming afterwards? So it's a bit like tricky, challenging. Yeah.
And how was it for you, David, when you started examining yourself more? Was it as well a similar experience like for Simon that you just had to process in the beginning a lot?
To process for sure a lot, but I think my reaction was from what I've heard and seen about Simon. You know, it was a bit maybe the shell. Simon, I'm not sure if you would agree with it, but maybe your shell was a bit thicker than mine, right? Maybe. Because he's also been like, imagine Simon has been with a bank for a lot longer than me. I was only conditioned into it maybe 5 years. Simon, how many years did you do with Deutsche Bank and then Julius Baer?
I did 14 years of banking, and I was really skeptic, and it was like basically like 10 years I forced myself to believe my mind. Like, and like I really like was conditioning my mind in a very, very like forceful way. So I would not trust anything but my mind. And now I was realizing, maybe that doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. And also when we started talking, there was nothing spiritual in it. It was very exact, like science. And, you know, we try to read all kinds of articles, very exact. But that slowly changed. But for me, it was more like, it went really fast. I realized, okay, there's really a lot that I don't know, but I thought I knew. And then what I did is I wanted to speak to other people. And that's where I ran into trouble, because I was so excited about it. And I thought, okay, but I didn't know how to like approach people, you know, in the right way. Because when Kern approached me, he knew by the way I talked. Now, because now we can all do that. We see when we talk to people, and that's what really excites me, is to how can I introduce that person to the topic that person will be like, wow, you know, I love this. Because you can introduce the topic in 1,000 or million different ways, but if you do it in the wrong way, they're gonna not agree with you. For example, like I give you the simplest one is Corona right now. You know, if you hit the wrong button, then that person will completely close itself, because it's always like, if you look at the people you get along with, it's the people that think alike, they have the same beliefs, they have the same values, and that attracts. And if you you know, go with Corona out there and you hit the wrong button, that barrier goes up and it will be very, very difficult to go around, through, or around. So that's really what excites me. And Kern, you know, he found my trigger point with the science, and I was like, wow. And I was convinced that there's a lot that I didn't know, and that was enough to get me going. Because when I like something, you know, there's somebody introduced me to the human design. There's like, I think, 5 types about how we deal with energy. And it's based on when you're born. And for me, it's a generator. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's for me, it helped me to think about it, because a generator is somebody who gets triggered with energy probably by some kind of impulse, and then starts to generate a lot more energy from it and starts to, you know, speak to other people and start to make moves. And, you know, it's a nice way to think about it, but that important, it's important that you understand the people, that you can have empathy. And I guess that's what we're trying to do tomorrow with this non-competitive argument that we always try to do. We don't try to argue points, but we try to slip in other people's shoes, because when you understand them and you can assume that they're doing the best at this time with the contacts that they have and the knowledge that they have at the time. So our job then, or our, you know, my vision, my dream, or our dream is to inspire people, not by, you know, not forcing them, not by pushing them, it doesn't work, but by giving the right information, being the at the right moment, at the right time, and then, you know, inspire them to decide that they want to do more.
So when you started questioning everything in the beginning, you wanted to talk to other people. So what happened then exactly?
Oh, don't get me started. It was tough. I mean, that you know, writing this blog, basically when you create, at the same time, it's also, you have that destructive force, the shadow grows as well. The bigger, the more creative you are, the bigger your shadow will be. So that's why you have a lot of Aretha, Carl Jung, and that's why you have a lot of like artists that, you know, they went a bit mad because they're so creative and stuff, but they didn't address their shadow. And so a good way to address the shadow when that grows is, for example, to write the blog. And, you know, I could go through it, what I've wrote there, and it's a lot about frustration, how I wanted to bring up a topic, I didn't feel understood, then I got frustrated, I got mad, they got mad, and everybody was mad. And it was like, you don't understand me. And I created friction. And, you know, when I quit my job, oh, my parents were like, oh, you can't just quit your job. And it's like, yeah, I can. And, you know, it was all, but it's an experience. And now I know so much better how to approach that situation, how, with more understanding, with it's, but you have to go through it. I think that's why one of the most frequently asked question I think that we get is, how do you deal with people that are, you know, that haven't started the journey yet? And so it's an interesting one. I think everybody has to go through it, but for me it was a lot of frustration, and until I found people, like I could speak to Simon, you know, and then together, you know, it's a process. You have to like let it go through, and every mistake that we make is an opportunity for growth. So that's really, and you know, that's why the safe platform. And with the environment, I mean, we get to meet people like I met Jakob, I met you. Look, these people, you talking to you guys is interesting because you're curious, and that's really, and the people come in your life, so it'll take care of itself. You just got to have a bit more, I'd say a bit more patience. That's what I was missing. I thought it's like from today to tomorrow, and you know, but it's not.
And because you mentioned that you were quite frustrated at times and you didn't really know how to handle the situation, and you just like quickly said, oh, you just don't understand me. But now your perspective changed. So can you tell us what your learnings were out of that and how you approach that situation now?
Yes. Look, so somebody explained to me, if I looked at myself, say a year ago, working for a bank, okay, and I see myself on the street and I go there, you know, in the morning at 8 o'clock, I'm wearing a suit and I go there and I just do, really, example, the Zurich train station. People would think, by some people would say, this is chaos, you know, chaos that's going on there. But it's really not, because the people, they're programmed and they're just walking from A to chaos. Would be if you stood there and you yelled, fire, 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 that's chaos. But everything else is just like the programming. It's just like, it looks like it, but really it's a program that runs day after day after day. So if I saw me do all in that program, what would I tell myself? And I have to say, like, when I'm honest, I have to say, with the knowledge that I had, with the contacts that I had, this is the best that I could do, because that's you know, what I thought, I'm doing the right thing. So really the approach is to look at people like this, that they're doing the best that they can, and but they're you know, they're not seeing certain things. Like, imagine somebody growing up in China, for example, I was there, and there's the censoring is heavy. Like, you can't even watch certain adult sites and stuff, you know, there's a lot of things you can't watch. So how do these people don't know? They just don't know. And so if, you know, they have, their parents didn't know, the kids don't know, it's very hard. You can't be mad at them for not knowing. So yeah, I just imagine myself, I was like that. And now I approach them with a different energy, with, you know, not like looking to fight or argue, but just to like tickle down cool ideas. And actually, you know, the people that know us, they see the change. Brenda saw how Simon changed. I saw how Simon changed. I, you know, my parents, they see how I change, how I come home and I'm full of energy and stuff. And I think that leading by example, that's the better way than pointing fingers and saying, you don't know. And, you know, it's time to wake up and stuff.
Yeah. So, Brenda, for you, the journey started because you saw the change in Simon and how he reacted in the beginning. So how was it for you? With what kind of mindset did you go starting this journey, seeing already the change in him?
I went very excited. I started very excited. And the first session with Karen was so much fun. I loved it. He was talking about quantum, the quantum field and all these things, energy and how, all these things. And I loved it. Simon asked me, how was your first session? I'm like, it was really cool. Like, what? Really? Like, yeah. But the second session, as of the second session, it started getting really challenging. Mm-hmm. Because then it was when he was asking more questions about my identity and all these things, what I believed, what I did not believe, all these things. And that was really, really challenging. And I think I had the same as Simon. It was looking to myself and thinking, I'm just a program. Like, what is my real self if I only live my life out of programs? It's horrible. It was really ugly for me to realize that. And thoughts or images started coming up that might have been suppressing to my subconscious, or I don't know where they were, but they just started coming up and I was so afraid to look at them. And I think I was, for a week or something, I was just locking myself into the room, like, oh my God, what is this? What is happening? And what are all these things? And where is my real self? Like, I'm just a robot. So that was very harsh.
Can you give us some of the examples of the limiting beliefs that you had, or like things that were a big part of your identity that you had to let go?
I would say, So the one that came right now, it's one of my limiting beliefs was that I thought I didn't know or I couldn't express myself. It was like, I don't have the words. I don't know how to speak to people because I didn't went to school, because I didn't had a university, because I didn't get the education. And I think all these limiting beliefs started when I first came to Europe, because life in Mexico and in Europe is very different. So in Mexico, it's normal that you didn't finish school. That's a normal thing. So you relate with people who are on school and people who are not. So it's all like a pot of many different peoples. So it's normal. Everything is normal there. And here, when I came, I would see the people in the streets just with the suits and just very focused on what they were going to, or no one smiled. And it was this thing of, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. there's something missing in me. All these people, they have the schools, they know like 5 or 7 languages, they have job, then they go to study something, and then there's something wrong with me. There's something missing. I don't have all these things. And now I think in the last 2 weeks, I have come to realize, just looking at the people in the challenges, the videos, how they think, or it's like, oh my God, maybe there's nothing wrong with me. I just saw how conditioned these people were. And I thought that was the normal, but it is not. So now I'm thankful and I realize there's nothing wrong with me. It's just, I just didn't go through that conditioning. And yeah, that's very cool to realize that.
And in general, like you said, that a lot of people here speak a lot of languages and you need to have a lot of degrees. And that's just like the society we live in, because we're conditioned to, yeah, get as much as possible, basically. Yeah. So what do you think is the best way to look at this with your eyes?
With my eyes to the conditioning, you mean? Ooh, that's a good question. I would say to look at it, not to look at it with amaze. It's nothing great. Yes, they might know a lot from knowledge, but it's being completely disconnected to other energies of your real self. Maybe they don't even know what there's within, and they only know what's on the outside. So I see it now. They know more of life on the outside, and I might know more of life on the inside. And yeah, I just see it as programs and as bullshit that people were told what you have to do or what you have to be.
How do you see this, David?
Yeah, you know, I was in Mexico, and I feel Brenda, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the family and how, you know, you grow up, it's like a lot of times, you know, the baby's a lot with the mom, right? And so what, you know, the kids, it makes a lot of sense, because when you think about kids until 6 years, they basically, no, not basically, they're only in the delta and the theta brainwaves. Delta is asleep, it's especially first 2 years, and then there's a lot of theta, which is still a slow, it's not, when we're in school, it's like beta and maybe alpha brainwaves, but that only comes at like 6 or 7. So until then, what the babies and the kids do is they don't think consciously, they just download programs. So basically they come to this world, they have a certain like a hardware and like something that can read the programs, but those programs, they just look at the people and they start doing the same thing without knowing. So what, and when the family is a lot like, you know, I was never like with my grandparents, they were always somewhere else, but I could imagine if it's the household, if we're living together or next to each other, that what you're given from the family is a lot, you know, is maybe a bit stronger, because again, you're not thinking, you're just like seeing what's happening. So yeah, it's strong everywhere, but I could see that in some, you know, depending on, it's the same thing if your parents eat unhealthy. Yeah, like your kid is going to, you know, it's not just going to change because, we're not being taught at school really, and maybe only till really late. And so you just like look and you start doing the same thing. And, you know, it's 90-95% is just unconscious. It's just a program, and that, you know, but if you realize it, it's the greatest thing on the planet because it gives you back all the power. And that, it's as simple as that. So it's a cool thing also.
And Simon, can you tell us a little bit about the layers you uncovered within yourself when you started asking the why behind the why and really figuring out which thoughts served who?
Yes, with pleasure. So, I mean, the news might not be surprising, but most of the programs are not serving me. And also like another add-on to, I mean, Brenda and I, we met 12 years ago and she was like, on that side and I was on that side, like both cultural, but then within our cultures, like, I mean, the common description of a German is like, oh, pretty like organized and maybe emotional, like kind of like flat. No? And I would be like the extreme side on that one. And Brenda, like, in the like emotional Mexican, enjoying life in the moment, or she would be on that side, like just the two of us learning like from each other, and like the first years not so consciously, more by being forced to learn from each other, and like over the maybe last months, years, a bit more consciously, you know, it's like also this insight, and it's for me so helpful, because from what I see from Brandon, she never went through this like massive conditioning we're experiencing here through school, through education, work. And initially it was very difficult for me to understand. It didn't make sense. And
what was so different about her then?
She was just happy being in the moment, and also like playing with our nieces. No, she would like play with them as being part of them, and I would like be there a bit more judge. And then I would always like look at like, yeah, we have to be effective and efficient. We have to do this and this and this. So it was always about doing and achieving and organizing and making the most out of life. And she would just have a good time. And I would never have a good time. I would just like achieve stuff all the time. So like very ridiculous. And but then on the other side, like Brenda would have these experiences. And I could see there was something, but I was not able to understand it, and she was not able to put it in words. So it was, and kind of like what I see her learning or changing over the last weeks and months is that she's able to communicate like what she sees and feels, and like yesterday there was like this example with the dogs, for example. I think he, where she like described the situation, she could see, feel in words, and suddenly this opened a complete different perspective, something to think about, which was not accessible otherwise for me. So I see how she, like she was always very right brain based, but then also like a little bit lost in there, and now she's kind of like getting a structure through it and being able to share it, put it in words, so that the others who are very much there can actually like understand it. And for me, like being there is kind of like exploring the other side. And one of the most obvious, but then not so obvious otherwise. Like it was obvious, but like this achievement, this like doing something to be worthy, and basically how we get conditioned as a society, and just you can test it. Just 15% of the population actually love themselves, and this is pretty depressing. But if you look at what is happening from all sides, we are very much conditioned in a way to do stuff, to achieve stuff, to get a, like a title, a certificate, a job, like a car, whatever, in order to achieve something, to be worthy, to get recognition. But if you think that to the end, like first of all, like you're working to get recognition from people like who don't care about you, who don't even think they're as much in the program as you are if you worked at program. So it doesn't make any sense. And very obvious, like one of the strongest programs I had was I need to do something, produce something, and use the time. Like there was literally like months, like I think like the year before I joined this program, like I would most probably there was not even 10 minutes where I would not have done anything, like where there was no purpose to what I was doing. Yeah, like, it was not just like sitting around and looking into the sky or so. And is it ridiculous? Because I was not fulfilled, and by what I just like thought, when I do this, then I will be fulfilled at some point. And like discovering these layers of programming and conditioning, and another one, like you discover that you do things not because you actually want them or you feel inspired to do them, but because you think that you do need to do that to get a certain income or recognition from someone, to prove society or someone else that you can, that you have something, that you can produce something. And another funny thing, and yesterday I went to the scale. So I think being part of this, like I lost something like 10 kilos. Yeah.
That's quite a lot.
But it was muscle. Yeah. And I was obsessed with training and optimizing everything like to achieve perfect body. And it's also kind of funny because at some point, like I still love to exercise, but I'm like optimizing my food and everything, nutrients and sleep, like in order to get the best possible result. It's also like more and more seeing the ridiculousness in it. Yeah.
And because you mentioned that you were like optimizing everything to get the perfect body, what was like the underlying belief that was driving you to do that?
Like I thought there was a big fun factor in it. So like it was not just like I didn't enjoy it at all. Like I really enjoyed it. But then there was a lot of force and like to achieve something, to prove to myself that I can do it, but then ultimately also to have something to show to others, to impress someone. Yeah. But completely ridiculous. Yeah.
And because you also mentioned that a lot of people don't love themselves. And you also just like, yeah, did never have a moment where you were not doing. So when did you start loving yourself, or what did you do in order to get that process started?
So I think it's not like you're not there and then you're there. Yeah, I think it's a gradual process. And I have no idea like what or if you could achieve 100% self-love, maybe moments of it. Yeah, it was a process over the last more or less 2 years. I think it like started initially by the realization it's not like emotions are something good. Like I thought it's like emotions are completely stupid for most of my life. They just make you irrational. And the here's like, that's what makes sense. Yeah? You cannot trust your feelings. So at that point, it's like, oh, maybe like emotions like have their reason. And then, there's a simple process to it, to like experience self-love. It's about forgiving yourself and giving up the hope for a better past.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, it's about recognizing what's happening, what thoughts you have. It's like, are you judging yourself or do you have a negative emotion? And kind of like, and then kind of recognizing why is that, or what is happening? Yeah, like, okay, I have this self-judgment, like, or I don't love myself. Why is that? And also resonating with that feeling. So it's not like, okay, looking at this doesn't make sense, dumb, but giving it the space to exist and accepting it and not wanting to change it or ignoring it. But then there's also like, you could sit for 10 years in your negative emotions. Yeah? It's like, it's not like, maybe there's a point to be made to do that. Like, but I feel that it's important to then remember what's the truth about you. And that's also what we're going through to this process. It's like looking at who you are at your core. It's like, who is your authentic core identity? And it is love. It's like, it's not that you need to learn love. It like you just need to remember it. It's like you're a potential, you're a form of energy. Like there's at your core, you're limitless and there's nothing to fix. And it's important to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And then release. Like, and that like in this remembering the truth, like there is no possibility for any suffering to exist. Yeah, you just must remember that, and then it's like release that whatever you like was within you, and reform it into love. And that sounds a bit funny in words, but it is actually very powerful, and it's gradually more and more self-love and less judgment. There might be moments depending on how, like negativity surrounding where this is kind of like maybe triggered or so. But then on the other hand, it's becoming more and more conscious. Also like this, like the funny thing is like, if you have the belief, I'm not lovable, I don't love myself. And then you enter in a relationship subconsciously, like if the other one wants to express love to you, you're sabotaging it subconsciously. Like mm-hmm. rejecting or withdrawing or making a stupid comment, and kind of like causing the reaction that the other one withdraws, and then say, yeah, I knew it, I'm not lovable. And that's the ridiculousness of how beliefs in your subconscious mind create your experience, and like becoming more conscious what's happening, yeah, and then looking at it, why it is happening, and it's okay, but what's the truth? Let it go. And This cycle is extremely powerful.
Because Brenda, you experienced this as I think you know each other for 12 years, and Simon was a different person when you started your relationship. So, and I'm pretty sure that at that point he didn't love himself to a big extent. So, how did you experience the relationship in the beginning?
Well, in the beginning, maybe I also didn't love myself. I don't know if to what kind of degree I didn't actually feel that. But no, it was a very difficult relationship. It was super difficult. And
can you tell us maybe some of the major problems that you experienced?
Yeah, I was very used to a lot of communication. And as David said, when he was in Mexico, we families are always together. Always. And at my house, all my family was there every day, my uncle, my cousins, friends. So we every day we were like a lot of people together, and we would all just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. That would be like a regular. And when I came, it was a lot of not talking. And I was like, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. right? Because if someone, like, from what I was used to, like, oh my God, he doesn't want to talk to me. Or when I say something, there's no response. I'm like, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. And I just started getting so worried and so unsure about myself. Being like, oh my God, I'm so boring, or I'm just dumb, or like all these things started just coming into my mind. And we had that adding to a lot of emotions on my side. It was like a roller coaster. And sometimes I think, oh my God, I'm so sorry, Simon. But yeah, the relationship on my side, especially, it was a roller coaster.
And what was your first reaction when you saw that he also wasn't talking to you? And how did you handle the situation back then? And how do you handle it now?
So back then, I think in the beginning, I was just stay still. Like, let's wait. And then I would start getting crazy, like, come on, say something. Also not very nice. Yeah, I would try to beg him, please say something. But yeah, also not very, very good on my side, right? And now it's completely different. Now I think we have found a balance on that. And
how did you exactly manage to find the balance?
I guess many years of getting to know to each other. Mm-hmm. Understand what is his position, what is my position, understand that it has nothing to do with me or with him. It's rather like the you versus you. It's rather a personal thing. Mm-hmm. And understanding that is, sometimes the craziness comes back and it's like, please, on some other things. But mostly we are on, we know it's your thing, or I know it's my thing, and it's like, handle that thing, and then we can kind of have a more harmonious relationship. But it's a ride. And what we have thought about, we have talked about sometimes why relationships, they break up, or there is a lot of understand about each other.
Yeah.
And a lot of knowing what's the background of the other person and know what's your own background.
Yeah.
And I think many people are just not open to do the whole inner work.
I mean, it's scary. So that's why a lot of people don't do it.
It is.
Very scary.
Yeah, it is. But when you see the outcome, then it's very worth it.
I see it as I think every relationship, like you go, like, has like reasons to part, yeah, because everybody is in his world and he just understands what he sees, fears, etc., and like the other person doesn't make sense at points. But if you change perspective and you see, for example, that like we're both energies, we're kind of like co-evolving and learning from each other, it becomes a completely different perspective. And there's this amazing experiment, which kind of like puts this into a perspective which makes it more understandable. Like, so you have a pot of water which is warm, you have a pot of water which is hot, very cold and hot. So all the women, they put their hands in the cold water. All the men, they put their hands into the hot water. And then, like, after 2 minutes, men and women, they put their hands into a water with medium temperature, reality. And now what you will end up with is like the women will argue the water is hot, the man will argue the water is cold, because they have this different perception, this different reference. And that's, this simple illustration is so powerful, because in a way we kind of like, we're seeing the same, but with a different reference. And in a way, it's pointless to argue about it. Like, and this simple illustration is so, so powerful and fits to many things.
Yeah, great example. Thank you for sharing. And David, can you tell us a little bit more about your own journey also when it comes to self-love and you were also a very rational person. So did you also see emotions as bad, like Simon?
I did not. And I don't remember if I loved myself. Probably not. The answer would be, if somebody asked me, do you love yourself? I'd be like, yes, but. And then I would say, you know, that would have been my answer. I can't tell you, but let me tell the story about like now I love myself. I can really say it. And it's a beautiful place to be in. And I hope that everybody can get there. I truly do. And because with that validation, when we're trying to validate ourselves with other people, why we got to ask a question like, why do we do that? And it's usually because we're insecure about something in us or we don't know. And what do we do if we're insecure? We're trying to control the outcome. We're trying to find control. And what happens is when, you know, you're all familiar with when we're, you know, back in the days, we're being hunted by some kind of animal. You have the famous fight, flight, or freeze response. So this is a short-term stress response that your body has, all the animals. The blood goes to the muscles. It goes to your eyes. It goes to your senses. Okay, no problem. So you run away. And you know, your body after 30 minutes goes back to normal and recovers, so you know you can run again. But when you're being chased into a cave and you're in that cave and the tiger is waiting outside for you, you can argue that you're in the cave and you're gonna be there in there for a while and you don't know when you can go out and get food and all that. So and at this point, it's important to say that it doesn't matter if there's a tiger out there or it could be a mouse. If that person in the cave is scared of a mouse, or it could be your coworker, it could be a family out there, it doesn't matter. If it's real to you in the cave, if you're scared, the body has, for a long period of time, has those stress hormones or stress responses in the body. And that, you know, the analogy would be toxic stress at work. If 85% of people don't like their work, they're going to be like under stress for a long period of time. And it's very real to them. Or take somebody who has I used to know, like, you know, mostly women, I have to say, they had like checklists for the day and they were so anal about those checklists. If they would go crazy if they couldn't, you know, do it, but it felt so good if they could cross one off. But crazy, you know, objectively seen, not really a problem, but for them, big problem if they didn't cross the gotta get 2 liters at Coop or something, you know? And so when you have that stress for a long period of time, what happens is you're very focused on your five senses, on what you can touch, what you can see, and you become very materialistic. You become more matter and less energy, because it doesn't matter if you really love somebody in the cave because you need to get out and get food. It doesn't matter if you're spiritual, like it. So that goes away, become materialistic. And when you do come out of the cave, or if you sometimes come out of the cave, you will be focused. Your senses automatically are focused on what's materialistic. So by definition, you lose that spirituality. You're not like thinking about it, you're losing it. And when you think of the old physical, the Newtonian physics, you know, how the planets move and stuff like that, that's the one side, and that's matter. And every time we're talking about three-dimensional space, it needs time because the atoms are somewhere else. And I want to go there, I got to move my body there. So it takes time. But the quantum physics, it's energy and it's all one, and it's not separate like the matter, but it's one. There is no time. So like, you know, if that's not proof enough that it's oneness, just by that, I would want to go from matter, move away from matter and go more towards energy. Because just the thought of oneness and not being separate sounds so much better. And so it's that stress and toxic stress for a long period of time, you know, that is really, really bad. And people, you know, they close their hearts after that. Because again, in a cave, you don't need the heart. But when you can open your heart, that's everything changes, and it's more powerful than a mind. Even I would say it's probably easier to get started with the mind, but you know, research knows that connection between the heart and the brain, it's the most important. And actually the brain, not the brain, the heart, in many cases knows before the brain, because it's coming from here. So you know, when you read these things or you watch, you know, the experiments, like there's no way than that. I hope there's no other way than to get excited about it, because it gives you all the power.
Beautiful. If you want to find out more, make sure to check out councilforhumandevelopment.org, and please share the podcast with your friends on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter with the hashtag Council for Human Development.